sleeping, he crept in, unlatched the chest, and stole it. He walked about the darkened nursery for a while, fingering the thing, testing its weight, running his finger over the body of the fox, feeling the brass take on the warmth of his hand, until something overcame him, not remorse exactly, but a dawning fatigue, an emptiness, and he returned the button to the place where he had found it. Cousin Magnus never knew. Nobody knew. But for months and years and even decades afterwards, long after Cousin Magnus was dead, that theft was as a splinter in his heart. He saw the moonlit nursery every time he spoke his cousin's name. He blushed at nothing. He sometimes pinched himself or uttered an oath at the memory. For although a man is judged by his actions, by what he has said and done, a man judges himself by what he is willing to do, by what he might have said or might have done, a judgment that is necessarily hampered not only by the scope and limits of his imagination, but by the ever-changing measure of his doubt and self-esteem. "I estimate that it will be at least April before the sale is successfully repealed," Shepherd was saying, with the same perfect gravity. "In the meantime, immediately in fact, I propose that you invest the entire sum of your commission into the building of my jailhouse." Nielsen raised his eyebrows in surprise. "But the money is not mine," he said, for the second time that afternoon. "It has already been revoked, de jure, if not de facto. Once the widow's appeal has been granted and the sale of the estate declared void, I shall have to pay my commission back in full." "The council can sponsor your loan with interest," Shepherd said. "The jail is publicly funded, after all. By the time your commission is recalled, I will be able to draw down funds from the reserve and repay you. We shall have a contract drawn up. You may name your terms. Your investment will be secure." "If you have public funding," Nielsen said, "then why propose this to me at all? What need do you have of these £400?
"Yours is ready money, and will be privately invested," Shepherd said. "My council funding has been approved, but not paid out. If I wait for the sum to be apportioned and deposited into the jail's account, I will be waiting for 30 bankers to push my contract across 30 desks and back again. It will be March or April, and the elections will be passed."
"And Lauterbach will have his convicts," Nielsen said.
"Yes, and he will have siphoned off a great deal more of the district's budget besides."
"Very well," Nielsen said. "Let us suppose that I agree to this, and you get your jailhouse. You said that both of us would stand to gain."
"Well, yes," Shepherd said, blinking. "You will have employment, Mr. Nielsen. You will get your standard commission on the labour, and the iron, and the timber, and the nails, and every small thing. Legal profit. That is how you stand to gain."
Nielsen could not fault this. Certainly it had been many weeks since he had contracted work that promised this degree of yield. But Shepherd's method of proposition was making him very uncomfortable. The jailer had used the word murder, and called that crime sophisticated. He had waited until Albert was present as a witness to ask about Emery Staines, and when he narrated the story of the Wells affair, he had made a great show of preventing Nielsen's interruption, lest the commission merchant implicate himself by speaking too much or too soon, thereby assuming that he could implicate himself in some way. Shepherd was treating his host as a guilty man.
Nielsen said, "And what if I refuse your offer? What then?"
Shepherd pulled his lips back in a rare smile, the effect of which was rather gruesome.
"You are determined to see this offer as a blackmail," he said. "I cannot imagine why that might be so."
Nielsen could not hold the jailer's gaze for long.
"I will grant you the loan and offer my services on commission," he said at last.
His voice was low. He pulled the architect's plans towards him.
"Please be so good as to wait a moment," he added, "while I make a record of the materials you require."
The shepherd inclined his head, and at last picked up the cup of coffee that was cooling on the desktop before him.
He took up the saucer with great care. In his great hand, the china seemed impossibly fragile, as if he might close his fist and with a single motion crush the vessel to a dust. He drained the cup and returned it to the exact position it had formerly occupied upon Nielsen's desk. He then replaced his pipe in his mouth, folded his hands, and waited. The irregular scratch of Nielsen's pen was the only sound between them.
"I shall draw you down a check on Monday morning," Nielsen said at last, as he penned the final sum. "We can advertise for tender in Monday's paper. I'll send a note to Löwenthal direct. I shall recommend that the labourers meet here in the auction yards at 10 sharp to be signed. That will give the men a chance to read the paper and spread the word. By Monday noon, weather permitting, we can begin work on the land."
Shepherd's eyes had narrowed. "You said Löwenthal. Ben Löwenthal, the Jew."
"Yes," Nielsen said, blinking. "We can't advertise without the paper. You could do it by flyer and gazette if you wanted, but everybody reads the Times."
"I hope that we are understood that the investment of your commission is strictly a private matter."
"We are understood, sir."
There was a pause.
"On my oath," Nielsen added, and then immediately regretted the phrase.
"Perhaps we ought to insert a clause into our contract to that tune," Shepherd said lightly, "for peace of mind."
"You can trust my discretion," Nielsen said, blushing again.
"I truly hope I can," said Shepherd.
He stood and extended his hand. Nielsen rose also, and they shook hands.
"Mr. Shepherd," Nielsen said suddenly, as Shepherd made to depart, "the way you were speaking before, about the savage and the civil, the old world and the new—"
Shepherd regarded him impassively.
"Yes?"
"I'm curious to hear how that line of thinking applies to all of this. The estate, the bounder, the widow Wells."
Shepherd took a long time to answer.
"A homeward bounder is a chance for total reinvention, Mr. Nielsen," he said at last. "Find a nugget, and a man can buy his own life. That kind of promise isn't offered in the civil world."
Nielsen sat alone in his office for a long time after Shepherd left, turning the jailer's proposition over and over in his mind. A feeling of doubt was seeding in his breast. He felt that he had missed a connection somewhere, as if he had come across a knotted handkerchief balled in the watch pocket of an old vest, and could not for the life of him recall what the knot was supposed to prompt him to remember.